to the PM Mastery Podcast. This podcast is all about helping you master your project management skills by sharing tips, tricks, tools, and training to get you to the next level while sharing the stories of other project managers on their journey in project management. And now, here's your host, Walt Sparling.
Welcome, everybody, to the current edition of PM Mastery. Today, I have Eileen Robin. Did I say that right?
Yes, you did. Hi, everyone.
Welcome to the podcast. You have a lot of cool things that you have done and are, and I'm not even going to attempt. I'm going to let you tell us a little bit about yourself.
Ooh, I feel like explaining it to my parents, who still have no idea what I do for work these days. Thanks for the intro. My name is Eileen, and I am a certified Six Sigma Master Black Belt with about 10 years of experience driving different types of continuous improvement and transformation projects in all sorts of different types of organizations. I started in government and moved my way into finance and healthcare and ended up in tech. Probably the most interesting thing about me is that I have three little kids, now three and under, so a three-year-old and twin boys that are 18 months. So my household is always wild.
I'll bet three. Whew. I got a 5-year-old grandkid and he keeps us hopping.
There is no such thing as sleep in my house.
You mentioned tech. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do?
Yeah. So in the last 18 months, I pivoted from running kind of continuous improvement projects and got hired on with a Fortune 500 e-commerce company to support their tech transformation effort to do end-to-end process design and governance to support the business side of digital transformation. And so they're working through reimagining their multi-channel service model. So if you are online or on the app and you have an issue and you need help, is it the chatbot? Is it calling the contact center? Like, what does that journey look like for our customers? And how can we leverage AI and different types of technology to create a better customer experience? So like, imagine you have to call somebody for help and you pick up the phone and the person knows exactly what your issue is. They can see like your purchase history. You don't have to feed them any of that information on the phone because it's all integrated on the back end. And so we're working through kind of creating some really cool experiences through that. And then my role as the process architect is to design the business processes that support that. Because anytime you have technology, there has to be processes on the back end or governance. And so that's the role that I play right now.
Okay. That sounds interesting. It'd be nice if you could go to a doctor's office and they would just know everything and you didn't have to fill out forms every time.
Oh, that sure would be wonderful. But I think we're years before that happens after spending 5 years in healthcare.
Why? Why do you do what you do? What drew you here? What keeps you going?
I love to help people. And I kind of consider myself like a non-licensed organizational therapist, where I get to come in and work with different teams, work with our customers, work with people all over the business to help them make their jobs easier and to create easier experiences. So if you think of like something that you can't stand doing every day and you're like, this is a pain. Why are we doing this? Why are we doing it this way? We've always done it this way. I get to come in and be like, yeah, that is kind of terrible. And here's your avenue through this work together to be able to change that and kind of elevate people's voices in the workplace. And so I find that really satisfying. And so I fell into process improvement. So I know I'm on the PM Mastery podcast, M project management certified. Consider myself more of the process improvement side. So I love working really closely with other PMs on the implementation because I'm more of the big idea person where I need to be really strong to come in and help me with the execution of those ideas.
Cool. Yeah, I think process improvement is kind of heavy with PMs. Mm-hmm. It's like a natural because they tend to be very detail oriented. And they don't want to waste a lot of time because they're, you know, some of them, sometimes they're jumping from project to project to project. And how can they make a process that mm-hmm. they can do where they can maybe batch stuff or I mean, I know I'm that way and I've seen some others like that. It's like, yeah, this is way too much work. We got to figure out a way to automate this.
Yeah, it's totally a natural fit. I love working with project managers.
All right. You're big into process improvement, obviously. You like being around people. You've got to probably learn stuff. But if I recall right, this is a new position for you, right? Pretty recent?
Yeah, I moved into this new company in the last 16 to 18 months.
Okay.
I've done similar work in finance in terms of process modeling and business process management, but doing it within the context of an enterprise-wide digital transformation effort and the level of complexity in a new industry, it's new for me. So I'm still on, I would say, my learning curve of trying it's steep.
And that's one of the questions is like, how do you continue to learn or keep up with, like, you've got a black belt? Do they require you to do any kind of continuing ed or PDUs or anything like that for the certification?
Yes, I do. I have to renew it just like I do with my PMP. But the nice thing is I can usually do some dual counting
right.
with the different organizations. So one of the things that I recently did was took some time and went through the Scrum Alliance Certified Scrum Master 2-day course.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm working in that tech space where we're doing release planning and things like that, I wanted to really understand from the experts what that looks like and kind of fill in some of the skill gaps. I had done it some of my day-to-day work prior, but really wanted that holistic picture of, like, what does it mean to be a Scrum Master? How does it fit in with Agile and product development, and try to fill in some of those technical gaps that I felt like I had. The rest of the upskilling, I think, for me personally, there are areas in my background that I want to lean into more. And then it's, how do you take something like a Six Sigma process improvement lean and adapt it to the organization that you're in so that you're making meaningful changes? Because there is, anywhere you go, there is the rules and then there's the unwritten rules.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of learning how to navigate what's valued, who the key players are, how things actually get done. And then you can layer in some of the more technical aspects of our skill set to drive change. So I think that's kind of the learning curve that I'm coming out of. Like, okay, now I understand how the organization is structured, how it's functioned, things that appeal to people, areas where maybe there's like a little bit of resistance because that's the maturity level with the organization, and where can we upskill? How can we upskill our peers? Things like that.
And do you have any specific channels that you go to for, like, continuing to learn or getting your PDUs?
Well, I have memberships through all of the licensure places. So I really try to lean into things that are available on through PMI and ASQ and things like that.
Okay.
For my non-PDUs, I think within the last 6 to 9 months, I will say, I have done so much learning through LinkedIn, and not the LinkedIn learning courses, but by connecting and building a network with other experts that maybe work in slightly different fields or have different backgrounds, or peers of mine that maybe I didn't have access to before because we never worked for the same company, where I can have thought partnership and reach out. And so that's been really wonderful.
Well, and you're going to get half a PDU just for being on here.
Sweet. I am not going to make the mistake of waiting until my certification is going to lapse to get all of that uploaded.
So. I've done it in the past. I did my first round. I waited till like 2 months before, and I knew I had a lot of PDUs already that I hadn't mm-hmm. recorded. So I had this spreadsheet that I started putting everything in so I could figure out which category they went to.
That was my mistake. Mine were all in one category.
Oh, yeah. So I actually get a lot of credits for doing this, and I read a lot. So I get a lot of, I listen to Audible. So it's really easy. The book is 4 hours long. Oh, that's four credits, you know, four PDUs. But I think I've got two more years.
I could hack True Crime Podcast and get some PDUs for that.
Yeah, you just got to figure out how it applies.
Yeah.
That's part of your, I'm learning how to do scope development. All right. So learning is big. Then we have challenges. So in any role, whether it's new or existing, there's bound to be some challenges. It could be personal or work related. What are you dealing with now?
So I think for me, I'm in the season of life that because I have three young kids, trying to balance being a mom with a career and with a side business that I also have, because I just love coaching so much and I wanted to have something that was just for myself, kind of outside of work. And so it's learning how to not be as critical of myself or like what I can take on at any given time. You know, I came from like the mindset of probably being an overachiever for 10 years in my career, of staying after work, volunteering for things, taking on, going to events, doing all of that stuff. And now that I have kids, realizing, you know, the kids come first and like, I might have to slow down a little bit on the career, but it's only just like a portion of my career and of my work life. And that's okay. The company I work for has great work-life balance. If I didn't work, and I say this to them all the time, if I didn't work from home and work for a company that had so much flexibility, I don't know that I could be in the workforce with three little kids. They're not home with me. They're in daycare, right? So I'm not sitting here trying to work full time and have my kids at home, but just between drop off, pick up, sick time, appointments, you know, really being able to be empowered to manage my schedule because my work gets done and it's delivered has been really, it's really been career changing. I think had I been at another company, I think I probably would have been pushed out of the workforce during COVID.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's so many stories from COVID. Mm-hmm. And how it's changed the world. And, you know, a lot of the corporations are fighting back with, no, we want you back in the office. And it's, I know they say it's collaboration, but the reality is they've got a huge investment in their buildings and it's sitting there wasting away.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big draw. And some of them believe that there is collaboration. And there is collaboration. I mean, on my team, I have them in every Monday or every other Monday now, because everybody's super loaded, to get that togetherness. And then they're in the office twice a week or they're at field visits, but no one works completely remote, but there are some jobs that working 100% remote fits.
So I work 100% remote. I'm on a global team. We are all over the country. So while some of us have offices that we're able to go into, some of us are not within driving distance to the office. The part that I do miss, especially for process improvement, is really that being able to whiteboard together and do more face-to-face chair sides, but we can do that on Zoom with shared screens. And then we try to get together at least a partial team or a sub team every quarter at one near headquarters, just to have that FaceTime, but it's not mandated. It's something that we choose to do when we make it work with our schedules.
Yeah, that's the tools now that are available are nice, but having that real face to face is a nice plus. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm actually I work for a large company, and we're all over the world, but we work for our particular group works for an account. And our main office on that account is in Charlotte. I'm in Florida. And I always look forward to the opportunity to be able to go to Charlotte and actually see my counterparts. So it's awesome when we get to do that. And it's very rare, but when we do, it's awesome.
I think when my kids get a little bit older, I will really appreciate being able to kind of travel to the different locations. Right now, it's all hands on deck. So if I'm going to be gone for 3 days, they're getting old enough now where I feel like one of us can be with the kids without the other partner. But when it was like two under two, that's a lot of little babies.
Yeah.
Or three under two, I mean.
So with your, you said your regular job, your side gig, your coaching, what do you coach on?
Yeah. So originally when I started out, I was coaching primarily with career coaching with women, helping them kind of navigate and elevate their career, navigate the corporate landscape, learn about how to ask for a raise, promotions, things like that. And then over time, that really, I went through a period of time working with career changers. So non-traditional career changers, like somebody who went to a UX boot camp and they wanted to land their first corporate gig. No professional experience, but they had boot camp. Or a teacher wanting to break into a corporate job. So I have been doing that for a few years. It started off as like a passion project. And then within the last year, I kind of formalized it more into a side business. And then recently, I'm starting to make a shift to get back to my roots. And we really like to focus on coaching folks in process improvement. So mid to senior career professionals who maybe have some background in process improvement, or they've already gone out and they have quite a bit of experience, and I want to make that pivot into that their first Six Sigma role, lean role, into transformation, portfolio management for a transformation effort. So I think that's where everyone says niche down. That's where I'd like to go, since that is my background and where I have the most
makes experience. Sense.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, what about tools, either in your personal or work environment? Do you have any favorite tools?
So lately, for all my PM listeners out there, I have been absolutely obsessed with the rapid decision-making model. Everyone says, from my previous experience, use a RASCI. That's got everything you need on a RASCI. Well, have you ever used a rapid decision-making model? That's okay. Let me spread the gospel. So Rapid is a tool that is designed specifically for roles and responsibilities within decisioning. Mm-hmm. And why I prefer that to a RASCI is because it's built just for decisioning. And with most organizations I've been at, you turn it into decision making with a strong consult or with the accountable roles, but for really large, complex organizations where there's a lot of partnerships and dependencies, having the rapid model is really great because it gives you the ability to have nuances with decisioning and decisioning authority. So you might have, for any type of decision that needs to be made, let's say there is a change that is somebody submits for change control, but there needs to be a change from the customer experience. It'll drive that. It'll drive a change from the configuration on the back end with, like, let's say a platform. Maybe that's a really big deal because it's a huge lift. And so it's to come in and say, who's the ultimate decider of this change that's come through? It can only be one person for ultimate accountability. But because we know that there's so many other stakeholders, maybe there's somebody that has to be an agreeer that has veto power. So it helps you level out to say, or changes X, Y, and Z, you're the decider, you're the agreeer. This team recommends, I want to know what you think, but you actually don't control the outcome. And so it helps to kind of find that fine line between consensus versus having a bottleneck because there's 15 different people that have their hand in the pot and you get stuck. I don't know if you've ever been in those projects where you get stuck, you can't move forward. Mm-hmm. There's two people in the room. Everybody wants to say this matrix gets really clear on who has a say over what. And like I said, with the leveling, it gives people more for highly matrixed organizations, really complex ones. It's a fantastic tool to bring into your toolkit.
And now obviously someone can Google, but mm-hmm. is there like any specific resources that you think would be like go-tos for that?
Yeah, there is. So it's Bain & Company is the consulting firm. It's their model. If you go to Harvard Business Review, there is an article called like who has the D, which is a silly name, but like who's the decider. Mm-hmm. So I would go to Harvard Business Review for the article, and it kind of gives you a whole once over. They take a little bit of practice to kind of go through your first one, but they're really straightforward to make. They're a living document. If you never look at it again after creating it, the value that you get from just having those conversations with your stakeholders is worth the time, especially if you're working in an organization where there's a huge power differential and you want to help one of your stakeholders kind of elevate their voice. and have a better seat at the table, this is a tool that you can use to facilitate through that and keep it copacetic, right? You've got okay. the structure, the framework for it.
Looks like I got some reading to do.
It's a great one.
Mm-hmm. What about on the Six Sigma side?
So on the Six Sigma side, I like the non-math tools. So, I mean, everyone talks about Six Sigma. We're like, data, 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 do the analysis, do the correlation. It can actually be really challenging data set to be able to do that because they're so complicated. So one of my favorite tools, it's called an FMEA, which stands for Failure Mode Effect Analysis. And while it can be, I'm not going to sugarcoat this, they're kind of boring to do. But they're super, super effective. And so what it is you take your process end to end, and for every step of the process, you kind of ask yourself, how could this fail? How could we go wrong here? What's the likelihood that something could go wrong here? If it did go wrong, what could be the outcome? And then what's the severity if it does go wrong? Is it a showstopper? Or is it a kind of a nuisance, but like, whatever, we can live with it. And so essentially you're creating your own prioritization matrix for solutioning. But why I really like this tool is if you've ever worked on a project and the VP says to you, how do you know we found the problem? Like, how do you know this fix is going to actually work? How do you know I can go back to the auditor and say, we're good, I've covered everything with this project that we've implemented? The FMEA is your tool because you are doing a step-by-step risk assessment. And you can do it at the beginning of a project to identify where the opportunities are for improvement and for risk mitigation. You can do it at the end of the project as a sanity check to go back and say, oh yeah, I captured everything. Or, ooh, no, there's a little bit of a gap here. And then lastly, it's really, really great tool, especially when you're working with operations teams or operation leaders who maybe they struggle a little bit more with a strategy. And so there might be something that to them is a fire that they want to put out or something that they're really, really anxious about, but it's kind of noise. And so this tool allows you to say like, hey, executive leadership, so you have 10 items that are kind of above the threshold of like, we should really worry about this. But these five down here, I know they sound kind of scary, but either the likelihood is it's not going to happen and we're overcorrecting and we're kind of wasting our resources here. Or if it does happen, the impact isn't actually as bad as we thought it might be. And so it helps with decisioning of where to put your resources and things like that. So I really like it. I think it's a great tool that anybody can pick up and use with just a little bit of practice, because like I said, there's really no math. They put it in a spreadsheet. It does some calculations for you for ranking and then that's it.
Cool. Another one.
Yeah, it's a really good one.
And are you trying to learn any new tools?
Am I trying to learn any new tool? Well, I'm struggling my way through Notion and have just decided at this point that I just might buy a template because I don't have the bandwidth, time, energy, or mental capacity to figure out how to use that tool. But I know it's really cool and I should add it to my list. So I would really love to learn how to use Notion.
Yeah, a friend of mine is going through the same thing and his results are the same. He goes, I'm just going to buy a template and then customize it because this is just way too complicated. Because it's powerful, but it's just way too complicated.
Very powerful.
So I'll wait for both of you to figure that out and then I'll pop in and take one of your templates.
Well, I'll wait for your friend to figure it out and then we can leverage this template.
Hey, David, you heard that. All right. So my favorite, did you know? Do you have an interesting did you know?
Yes. Did you know that if you wanted to replicate Darth Vader's suit, it would cost you $18.3 million from an unverified source on the internet? I'm going to trust that this number is accurate based on my Google search.
That's interesting. Yeah. I wonder why 18.3 million? That's what about it would be so expensive?
That's to make a real life replica. You would need a voice modifier, breathing apparatus, prosthetic limbs, and augmented reality filter.
Okay.
Or you could just spend $600, pop over to Disneyland, buy yourself, make yourself a wolf ward.
Those lightsaber.
That's totally not what it's called. My husband is a Star Wars nerd, not me.
All right. Well, this has been an interesting conversation. Process improvement, love it. I'm definitely not as technical as you on that. I can tell because of your experience, but that is something I love to do. Hate waste.
Honestly, well, all it is it's really a mindset. And if you have that mindset, you can do process improvement. Everything else these are just tools that you pick up along the way. So I would say for all of our folks out there listening, spend some time. If you're interested in process improvement, look into Six Sigma Green Belt certification. It's a great way to either open more doors or just to have that on your resume. Goes really nicely hand in hand with project management.
Good deal. All right, you heard that. Come
stalk me down on LinkedIn, and I will talk to you all day long about process improvement.
And I am definitely going to have you, I have your LinkedIn profile in the show notes, so people mm-hmm. can check you out, and we'll get you some more followers.
Yeah, appreciate that. Thank you for your time. This has been so much fun.
Well, I appreciate you coming on, and for everyone else, we'll see you on the next episode of PM Mastery.
Thanks for listening to the PM Mastery podcast at www.pm-mastery.com. Be sure to subscribe in your podcast player. Until next time, keep working on your craft.